So welcome, everyone. Thank you for coming this morning. For those of you who are not new but have been here before, you may wonder about these people wearing brown jackets. These brown jackets are worn by people who have been ordained in what's called the Order of Interbeing. The Order of Interbeing was an order that was founded by Thich Nhat Hanh. I'm sure many of you are familiar with Thich Nhat Hanh, over 50 years ago in Vietnam. It was an attempt by him, excuse me, to really do two things. One was to revive, reinvigorate Buddhism. Thich Nhat Hanh was a monk, but he really believed that Buddhism had become stultified, institutionalized, bureaucratized in Vietnam, and had really lost its vitality and its real engagement in the lives of the Vietnamese. So he was part of this earlier movement in terms of what was called engaged Buddhism, and that was just the other variable was the war, the Vietnam War, and all the violence and the social dislocation, and et cetera. So out of this, he felt a new order was needed in Vietnam. I won't go into it today. There is a book called Interbeing, which has these precepts, these trainings, guidelines of how to live kind of an engaged, awakened life, and his commentary on them. But just to say that his order is continuing throughout the world, and there's a whole process of mentorship and all that to enter it. But in our community here in Florida, Florida Community Mindfulness, we have a very active community of members. There are over 40 in our community. These are both people who have been ordained and people who are aspirants. So people who wear the brown jackets are people who have been ordained. And actually, before we end tonight, there will be several members of our community who are aspirants who will stand and kind of show you their face and ask you for their support during their aspirancy, because they're really here to serve us. So it's good to know that. We just bowed a few minutes ago, right? And we were told to bow to our Buddha nature, the potential that we all have. It is good to know. It is good for all of us to know that our true nature, our Buddha nature, is alive and well. It doesn't need our help at all. We're the ones who need the help. Because from the realization of the Buddha until today, it is the fundamental understanding and that all of us, at the very base and source of our minds, have this pure, undefiled nature that is the source of all wisdom and compassion, and that it is unsullied, untarnished. The practice of Buddhism, the practice of a spiritual path, is about how do I awaken that within me, how do I know that nature within me, and how do I begin to live from it, rather than a more narrow, constricted, tinier self. So what I wanted to just read today especially because of this retreat we had this weekend, and it's in the Thich Nhat Hanh. He's the founder of it, the inspirer of it. I wanted to just read a little bit, one paragraph. There's this book called Old Path, White Cloud. It is not short. It's over 550 pages. And it is Thich Nhat Hanh's account of the Buddha's life. But it has, as many of you know who are familiar with Thich Nhat Hanh, he's a writer and a poet. So we might say, we might call this Old Path, White Cloud historical fiction. It is kind of his take, his story on the Buddha's life, but it's historical. So there's lots of basis on many, many different episodes of the Buddha's life taken from the Buddhist canon. So it's not just made up, but it's a little free. So it's quite wonderful. It's a work of historical fiction, but a lot of good history in it and teaching. So I just wanted to read, share with you one section, and we can talk about it. And so I am reading from the chapter called The Morning Star Has Risen, which is really an account of, in a few chapters, of the Buddha's enlightenment. Obviously, it wasn't the Buddha's enlightenment, it was Siddhartha's enlightenment, because he was Siddhartha. And he was only, the Buddha was just an epithet, what he was called after his great enlightenment. And the Buddha simply means awakened one. That is why it is said in Buddhism that everyone has the potential to be a Buddha, because a Buddha is no different, it doesn't look any different than you and I. That is not the Buddha behind us. All of us, that is a symbol of our capacity and potential. So anyone who awakes to their true nature and lives a total selfless life, dedicated to benefiting beings in all ways, at all times, is a Buddha. So he was called a Buddha. So everyone here can be called Buddhas too. So I'm reading from the chapter called The Morning Star Has Risen, which is about the chapters on his awakening. And I read, when we learn to calm our minds in order to look deeply at the true nature of things, we can arrive at full understanding, which dissolves every sorrow and anxiety and gives rise to acceptance and love. Okay, I mean, I'll read a little more, but that's quite wonderful right there. And it kind of gives you a sense that even though whatever we are, wherever we are in our lives, and we come here and we, focus on our breathing and our bodies, this is the first step in the Buddhist meditative path, which is we need to calm these minds of ours. Everybody know what I'm talking about? Okay. So we have to calm it, quiet it, perhaps in a way tame/train it. We calm it, one, because it feels good. It feels better to have a calm mind than an agitated mind, right? So we calm our minds for just pure mental health reasons. It feels better, right? It makes us less reactive. It feels more wholesome. It is the basis for happiness, to have a calm mind rather than a mind that is always roiling about, always swept about by all kinds of emotionalities and dramas of life. So it feels better to have a calm mind. But because the Buddhist path is really about, and we'll get into that, about understanding, which means seeing deeply into our minds, our thoughts, the nature of things, we can't do that if our minds are just continually all over the place. Is that clear? So the calming of our mind has a purpose in terms of our kind of spiritual development, right? And if we do not see what is really in front of us, if we cannot really see what is going on in our life within ourselves, how can we ever make any changes? You see? And for those of us, and there are probably many people here, who are trying to make changes in your life, right? You read the books, you listen to the talks, you know, but you wonder, why don't I really change? Because it is necessary that we calm our minds enough that we can see more clearly what is really going on, what really is causing me suffering, what really causes me happiness. Or is the kind of happiness that I call happiness really happiness? Or is it just really a momentary pleasure or a momentary cessation of suffering? Right? And what is the causes? You know, why do I suffer? Why do I get emotional? Why do I react? Where's that coming from? Right? So to see all this, there has to be this calming of the mind, right? I mean, the standard kind of metaphor or simile is, again, if we are stepping into the water at the beach, and we want to see what is there, right? We want to look into the water. As long as we are moving about, stirring up the sand, stirring up the muck, we cannot see even our own feet, can we? Right. But when we stop, when we stand still for a few moments, the sediment settles, and now we can see what's there. Okay? So we have to begin the process of calming, quieting, stabilizing this mind of ours. Right. What mind? This mind. Everybody get this thing that is listening to me right now. And this thing that is generating thoughts, perceptions. This is your mind. It is the source of your happiness. It is the source of your unhappiness. It is the source of love and kindness and patience. It is a source of anger and agitation and anxiety and despair. All these things, everything, all your thoughts, all your feelings, all your memories, all your dramas, where do they live? In our minds, nowhere else. So that's why Buddhism puts such a stress on knowing our mind. And before we can know our mind, we have to what? Calm it. Clarify it a bit so we can begin to see what's there. Is that clear? Yeah, it's kind of simple. So we can arrive at full understanding, which dissolves every sorrow and anxiety and gives rise to acceptance of love. So this is what the path is about. Dissolving every sorrow and anxiety, which is just code for all emotional afflictions. Many people think if I could just lessen, maybe by 10 or 20% of my emotional afflictions, I'd settle for that. And that is true. On a scale of 1 to 100, coming down 20 points, 20% in emotional affliction is better. But please understand what the Buddha said. Dissolves every sorrow and anxiety. Please understand that that is within the capacity of all of us. Why is it within the capacity of all of us? Because our sorrows and our anxieties are arising in our mind because of specific ways that we are relating, thinking about, acting in life. They don't arise by themselves, right? They arise because of causes and conditions and they can end when the causes and conditions change. It's really that simple. So now continuing on. Gautama now saw, and again, this is Thich Nhat Hanh's description of the Buddha's enlightenment, or Siddhartha's enlightenment. Gautama was another name for him. Now saw that understanding and love are one. Without understanding, there can be no love. So very interesting. This is very a key point that Thich Nhat Hanh has always loudly presented. That love is understanding. When you love somebody, you are willing to what? Understand them. That's how come you can love them. If you don't understand them, you will not love them. Right? If you don't understand them, they will what? Be a pain to us. They will be an irritation to us. They will be a source of anger to us. Well, isn't that true? They will be a source of suffering to us. And why is that? Because love is not just an emotion of the heart the way it's presented, you know, in pop songs and on Hallmark cards and on Valentine's Day. This is not love. Love, when you love somebody, it is understanding. It is beyond emotionality. Because what do we know about love based on emotionality? Is it a constant thing? No, it's emotional, right? So you feel it and then you don't feel it. And you wonder why, again, pop songs, pop culture, it's all about what? In terms of love, right? What?
Romance,
but it's all about the ups and downs, right? Right? The ecstasy of it, the pain of it. The ecstasy of it, the pain of it. Ecstasy of it, pain of it. But, you know, it's like, and it depends where you are in your life, which type of song you like. Right? So there is a certain truth in pop songs about love, but somebody might go, well, maybe, you know, maybe there's something wrong about that whole thing, you know, falling in, falling out, loving, hating, you know, maybe that whole thing is really a source of suffering. Thich Nhat Hanh says, love is understanding. To understand somebody, we have to what? We have to leave the world of self. My needs, my wants, my desires, me, 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 me. And enter the world of another. To enter the world of another is a willingness to be inside them. Right? And to understand what life looks like through their eyes. Right. It's a big step for many of us. He now saw that understanding and love are one. Without understanding, there can be no love. Each person's disposition is the result of physical, emotional, and social conditions. Let me just read that again. Each person's disposition is the result of physical, emotional, and social conditions. Is this the way we see it? No. We think, and this is about ourselves, we think the way my disposition, the way I am disposed to be, is me, right? And when anybody else out there, we think the way they acted, whatever they're acting and saying, that's them, right? But that's not true. We are the way we are because of causes and conditions. Very few of us could say, who I am, I was from birth. All the feelings, all the thoughts, all the ideas, all the values I came into this world with. Right? Popped out of my mother's stomach and immediately I kind of began holding forth about life. No, we were conditioned by our families, by our upbringings, by our schooling, by our friends, by our community, by our society. You see what I'm saying? That's what he's saying. When we understand that, we cannot hate anybody because we understand that they are simply a product of their causes and conditions, as am I, right? As am I. And he says, actually, when we understand this, we cannot hate even a person who behaves cruelly. But all, I mean, that sounds like, these kind of monstrous figures that we think are cruel. But oftentimes, even in our most intimate relationships, we think the other person is being cruel to us, right? How are they being cruel to us? Because they're not letting us have our way. Children often think their parents are very cruel, right? Because they're not letting them do what they want. When we understand this, we cannot hate even a person who behaves cruelly, but we can strive to help transform his or her physical, emotional, and social conditions. So this is, now we're getting into really what kind of understanding this way of looking at things is bringing to us. You know, we may look at ourselves, and there may be things about ourselves, the way we act or don't act, the things we say or don't say, the way in the privacy of our mind, the way we really think and look at things, this inner dialogue of ours and our emotions. We may look at many things within the sphere of our body, speech, and mind and go, what? Yuck. Right? Yuck. You can see I hang around with three-year-olds a lot. But there may be, we often have aversion, even for ourselves, parts of ourselves. And we often have a lot of aversion, negativity toward others. But we only can have that if we're not understanding that again, it's created by causes and conditions. They're a product of their cause and condition. The world is a product of its causes and conditions. But that is not fate. That is not written in stone. That is just a long-term process of many variables that in this moment is manifesting like this. But as it said here, when we can strive to transform the physical, emotional, and social conditions. Right? If we want to change the world, we need to change the physical, emotional, and social conditions of the way people grow up, people are educated, people experience, right? Then people will change. But that is bigger than beginning with me. Right? Maybe first, my first object of transformation should begin with me. Right? I mean, that is what a spiritual path about. Spiritual path as opposed to what might be considered a religious path. A religious path is usually about something to believe in, right? It's about faith in. But a spiritual path, and again, I'm making a delineation that's not ironclad, but a spiritual path is really about personal transformation, right? It's I want to become that. I don't just want to believe in that. I just don't want to worship that. I want to become that. Which means if we do want to become something, in this case, perhaps someone who is happy, someone who has a peaceful mind, someone who has a loving heart, someone who acts in life in an intelligent and wise way. On the other side, someone who is not always, cast about by, emotional storms, not always caught up in emotional dramas, not always dealing with afflictive emotions and conflict. If I don't want any, so if I want, I want one, I don't want the other, then I need to begin to change the what? The conditions of my life. It's really that simple. I am who I am today because of all the causes and conditions of my past. I can't change that. None of us can change our past, but we can change the conditions of our present. Right? That's where the freedom, that's the freedom that all each of us have. Because we understand that the way I am is not fixed and solid and permanent. It is just a product of conditions. And when I learn to work with the conditions of my body, speech, and mind, intelligently, wisely, compassionately, I can chart a total different path for myself in my life. Because now I am living consciously. I'm living from awareness. I'm not this living from acting out, right? The dramas of my childhood, right? Many people, they're adults, but they're still being driven and working out, the emotional and the personal and the interpersonal traumas of their childhood. Can't even enter adulthood yet, because I'm still, my mind and my actions are still dominated by the way I've been conditioned, right? Anything that has been conditioned can be deconditioned. That's just behavioral science. I mean, the Buddhists knew this for thousands of years. Western psychology has known it for maybe 100 years. It's just a matter of conditioning. Deconditioning. And then reconditioning. But this time, who's doing the reconditioning? Not your mother, not your father. You. And hopefully this time, you are proceeding up along a path that is tried and true, that has been practiced for thousands of years, that has been consistently replicated over thousands of years, and is all about transformation. When we understand this, we cannot hate even a person who behaves cruelly, but we can strive to help transform his or her physical, emotional, social condition. Understanding gives rise to compassion and love, which then gives rise to correct action. But in order to love, it is first necessary to understand. So understanding is the key to liberation. So this is very important for us to understand. For those who are interested in meditation, many people begin these days because meditation has kind of entered our, the world is kind of not only in the world of spirituality the way it was originally, but has also entered the world of mental health. It has also entered the world of quote-unquote self-improvement and is in a certain way entered in our more popular culture. So while meditation definitely has many benefits that are now being researched, and you know, for some many people, until they can kind of research it and quantify it, it doesn't become real then, even though, you know, for millions and hundreds of millions of people, it's been a known fact that this stuff works for thousands of years. there are certain people that need to kind of find proof of that. But anyhow, it is now very well proven the therapeutic and even medical, et cetera, mental health benefits of meditation. But that is just the beginning. Mindfulness, learning to be present, learning to know how to touch reality, to see the reality of what's in front of us, to know when we're drinking, to know when we're eating, to know when we're walking, to know when we're talking to somebody and learning how to be present to them, to be present to the sky and the earth and the trees and the beautiful things around us. That's a good beginning. That's a good foundation. But what Tai is saying here is that to really awaken the real capacity of its mind for compassion and loving kindness and connection, mindfulness and concentration is not enough. There has to be understanding. There has to be insight into. And that is why, actually, in the Buddhist path, meditation in the Buddhist path has three aspects: mindfulness, concentration, insight. Right? That's a kind of a developmental path. Because at the end of the day, it is only through understanding, right, that real liberation from suffering is possible. So I can be present to Barb, right? This is Barb sitting here in the front. I can be present to Barb. I can see her. She can speak and I can listen to her. But understanding is taking a leap to really understand who she is, which is more than the way she looks and the tone of her voice and the words she says, right? Those are all symbols. Right. But if you want to understand somebody, you have to go inside them and really see what it's like to be somebody. When you understand them and are willing to make that leap, then you really have the capacity of what? Loving them, but as they are. Again, most people, they love people as what? Objects. Right? That's why most people's love is very conditional. Right? I will love you as long as you fit my ideal of what a loving person is for me. Right? Everybody know what I'm talking about. And as soon as you stop being that person, right, I will no longer love you. Is that a very deep love? Is that a very trustworthy love? No. But that's the way most people love. Why? Because they don't know any better. Because in our society we are told that love is an emotion. Right? Right? I'm not really into pop songs these days. Are there songs about love is understanding? I mean, is that what is that what people are singing about? Yeah. Well, maybe one day there will be. And it's the same thing with ourself. Right? We need to, you know, once we have some degree of mindfulness, mindfulness in this case of our minds, awareness of, you know, when we have thoughts, we know what they are. When we have feelings, emotions, we know what they are. We are present to them. We can hold everything in awareness, and then we can look deeply to see what is supporting them, what is causing them to arise. When we've done that, then with the tools that we've been given, we can heal and transform that which needs to be healed and transformed. We can let go of that which needs to be let go of, and we can cultivate. We can plant within our mind stream and cultivate a whole new repertoire of ways of being, acting in the world. In order to attain a clear understanding, it is necessary to live mindfully, making direct contact with life in the present moment, and truly seeing what is taking place within and outside of oneself. Practicing mindfulness strengthens the ability to look deeply, and when we look deeply into the heart of anything, it will reveal itself. Practicing mindfulness strengthens the ability to look deeply. And when we look deeply into the heart of anything, it will reveal itself. This is the secret treasure of mindfulness. It leads to the realization of liberation and enlightenment. Now, there could be many people sitting here today going, "Well, that's not my experience." Right? When I sit down to practice even just mindfulness of my body breath, I don't experience this as a pathway to my own enlightenment and liberation. Right? Don't get discouraged. Right? We have to begin somewhere. Right? We have to begin somewhere. And unfortunately, or fortunately, we can only begin where we're at. Is that clear? I mean, it sounds simple, but it's really quite profound. This mind of ours, as it really is, not as we'd like it to be, is our mind as it really is. Is that clear? And that is where we begin. And we enter the path even as beginners, knowing that if I continue to walk this path, if I continue to do these practices, over time, things will change. It is a process, right? It is that simple. It is no different than, setting out on a 5-day hike to climb a mountain, right? All kinds of ups and downs, all kinds of easy, hard, right? All kinds of enjoyable, all kinds of painful things along the way. But you know, as long as you stay on the path and keep putting one foot in front of the other, you know what? You will get there. It's really that simple. If you are taking your temperature every 5 minutes, how am I feeling? Do I want to do this? Am I crazy? I could really be enjoying myself somewhere else much better than, you know, right? The journey will not be very pleasant. And two, there's a very good chance that you'll be continually going back. Right? And many people here know what that's like. Right? Many people, their spiritual life, their transformative life, their desire to be free of suffering and to really... But again, that's sort of an absence of, but it really implies that those suffering mind states are being replaced by the cultivation of a whole slew of positive ones, right? That will occur if you keep cultivating. But if you're always stopping and starting, advancing, going back, you will always find yourself more or less where? In the same place, And that is why there are many people who have practiced quote-unquote spirituality, spiritual path for many years, for decades. And again, it doesn't mean that there hasn't been some positive changes. But often the truth is we find ourselves really at a deeper level within ourselves. It's still kind of same old, right? Is that clear? That is because we have not let it go deeper than this. Because we've never really wanted to get to the mountain. Right? You know. The path is the path. But what's going to keep us on the path? You want to get to where it's going. Right? That's why you're on the path. If you lose that, then you lose your motivation. You lose your inspiration. So it's kind of tricky, you see? Because at the same time in Zen, we say, don't be attached to the outcome, right? But I thought that's Zen, you know? Well, it's both, you see? See, I'm on the path because I want to get to the mountaintop, right? But because I'm on the path, I don't need to keep thinking I got to get to the mountaintop. Right? I can enjoy every step because I know it's going to the mountaintop and that's where I want to go. That's what it means. So I can have a goal. And anybody who tells you that Buddhism doesn't have a goal doesn't know anything about Buddhism. Buddhism has a goal. Buddha always said, I teach one thing, the cessation of suffering. You know what the cessation of suffering is called? Nirvana. So Buddhism is about awakening. Buddhism is about enlightenment. Right? And if that's not clear, then that's not Buddhism. Is that clear? But if you're always, if that's what you're always thinking about, it'll just become another thought that causes you suffering. I'm not there yet. I'm not there yet. Oh my God. No. It's this wonderful. See, Buddhism is not a teaching of duality. Like either or. See how our minds go, it's either or. You can't want to get to the mountain and not enjoy, you either gotta hurry up and get to the mountain. Or you got to just relax and enjoy the journey. You can't, right? It's either or. See, that's a dualistic mind. Buddhism is both and, not either or, right? It's I want to get to the top of the mountain, and I want to enjoy the journey. Can you see that's a little harder? Because we like it either or, right? In Buddhism and Zen, we say cause and effect are one. Or as Thich Nhat Hanh says, there's no way to peace. Peace is the way. Right? That's what it means. You want a peaceful world? Become a peaceful person right now. Can you see? Cause and effect are one. Right now, we make a cause which is the same as the result. Right? I want to be free of suffering. Oh, what are you doing right now? What kind of causes are you making in your life right now? Right? It's not going to happen by itself, is it? I want a calm mind. Then calm your mind right now. Because now is the cause. You're making cause for your future. Cause and effect are one. Right? I want to be a more open person. I want to be a more loving person. Well, you can only become that right now. Make those causes right now. Is that clear? That's how this thing operates. Right? Apple seeds grow apple trees. Acorns grow oak trees. Apple seeds don't grow oak trees. Right? Acorns don't grow apple trees. There's a wonderful quote that Thich Nhat Hanh says. He says, all the actions of our body, speech, and mind bear our signature. Bear our signature. Right? Do we think about that? From the moment we wake up to the moment we go to bed, are we aware that my thoughts, my actions, my speech, all are bearing my signature? This is how I want to sign myself in this moment. When you begin to think this way, you'll see change will occur very quickly. I mean, any questions? We only have a few minutes, but I want to hear from the OI people. Are there any questions about how to do this? I mean, very simple, practical ones. Yeah, I think you all get it. So good, thank you.